Hi, everyone. This is Lisa Bowie with Your Funeral Coach. We're excited to be here today with one of my favorite people in the entire profession, Tyler Anderson with Precoa. You know, Your Funeral Coach helps businesses create effective mentorship programs. We help developing next-gen leaders and facilitate business transitions. And the biggest thing we do that we love more than anything is to help people grow and become better leaders. And that's why I wanted you to meet Tyler today, because Tyler is one of the up-and-coming and current growing leaders in our profession. And Precoa has a wonderful, wonderful workplace. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the awards that they just received, and we're going to ask Tyler more about himself and how he became the leader he is today. Tyler, welcome. Tell us a little bit about you.
Oh, thank you, Lisa. As you mentioned, I'm the Senior Vice President of Business Development for Precoa. I'm a third-generation funeral professional. My grandfather started funeral homes in 1944 in Cincinnati. My uncle, my cousin, my father, my sister, my aunt are all licensed funeral directors. And so I grew up in my family's funeral homes that were just actually south of Dayton, Ohio. So my father actually branched out on his own and started his own funeral home, purchased his first funeral home in 1980. And so I have the kind of traditional funeral home family story of growing up in the house in the parking lot of the funeral home and using casket cranks as the as my toy guns when I was running through the parking lot.
And not you too.
All those things.
Oh, we did the same thing. Oh, that's funny. I love that. Casket cranks is a toy gun. I love it. I love it. Well, I know your dad, and that sounds like something he'd probably be okay with as long as it was you used appropriately and not out in public. So,
we probably don't have time for the story, but there was one day where he was fine with it unless I took them all, which I had a bad habit of collecting them. And then when there was a service, then they weren't there. So aside from that,
that's
great.
That's bad. I used to always put the casket cranks in my league cars too, and my hearses and my transfer vehicles, because you never know when you're going to need one. So we just kept collecting them too. I still have them, you know, they're still sitting in some of my cars right now. My husband's like, "What is this?" I said, "Oh, this is a casket crank." He goes, "Okay, what do you need it for?" I go, "Well, you never know."
old habits die hard.
They do. They do. Well, Tyler, so you grew up in a funeral home family, and then your dad started Outlook, I know, which was a pre-planning company. And at Bowie's, we used Outlook. And I was just so impressed with everything you did for your clients. But this is kind of where you grew into a leader. You kind of went away. You went up, like, am I recalling this correctly? Chicago area, north, right? And you started growing yourself as a leader. So tell us a little bit about some of your experiences that helped you grow as a leader. I think this is important that we learn from each other. And, you know, those kind of things I think are so important. What did you do to grow yourself as a leader? How'd your dad support and help you, et cetera?
You're right. I'll take a quick step back. My father started a pre-need marketing organization, as you mentioned, the Outlook Group, in the late 80s. So he's very much on the forefront of the pre-need. And so when I got out of college, I moved to Chicago, and I had the good fortune of starting as an advanced funeral planner for a funeral home in the greater Chicago area. And then eventually I moved into sales management, and my territory was Wisconsin. I always make the joke that everywhere my dad relocated me, it got a little bit colder, so I wasn't exactly sure what he was telling me. And then after that was about 8 years. And then in 2011, I moved back to Ohio, and he and I transitioned the business where I purchased the Outlook Group from him. And I think a couple of things through that experience was, you know, really having the opportunity to be at the kitchen table with families and really hear what their considerations were, the value they put in having an intentional plan in place that their family would be left behind for their family as kind of a roadmap for what do they do on a really, really difficult day was really impactful for me. But I think if I looked at development of leadership for myself, obviously I had the good fortune of growing up with a father who owned a funeral home, started a pre-need marketing organization. I got to learn kind of both sides of the business. And he definitely would, I would point to as you know, incredibly influential in my development and what I view as really great leadership. And the thing that he really put on me, and there's actually a conference room here at Precoa called the Outlook Room. And there on the wall, there's a quote and it says, "This business is about people. It always has been, and it always will be." Yeah. And underneath that, it says Charles W. Anderson. And that is something he imparted on me from the very beginning, that this business starts with people, it ends with people, and it's always going to be about the people and the relationships you build. And I think that was really formative for me. It stuck with me. And then he'd always ask me a question, you know, whether it was beginning of the day or the end of the day. Beginning of the day, it was, how are you going to make a difference? And if it was the end of the day, it was, how did you make a difference?
And oh, how nice. Every day. So when you and your dad talked, he'd say, you know, think about making a difference in the lives of other people today. And then he'd ask you at the end of the day, how did you do it? So did you ever have a day where you don't think you made a difference in people's lives?
Oh, certainly.
Did you feel like you had a bad day of, and you failed? And if so, what did your dad tell you? What kind of advice did he give you? Because there is that saying, we learn more from failures than we do from our successes, right? So yes. I heard about a family, this lady who teaches and writes books, that her dad and mom, every night they had to come home from dinner at the dinner table and share a story about their failures, not their successes. Can you imagine? Every day as a child growing up. And then they talk about how to overcome those or what did they learn from them. I thought it was a very interesting theory in child rearing. But what happened when you had a bad day or a failure, or you weren't successful? What kind of advice did your dad give you?
I think there's a couple things that's a really great question. Anybody we really look up to in our lives, or people we kind of hold up as being very successful, rarely will you hear them tell you about their great successes and what they learned from them. Mm-hmm. Most every time they're going to tell you about the adversity that they faced, the challenge that they faced, or the failure that they learned from. And sure. my father always talked a lot about failing forward, and it's not, you know, about the actual failure, because there really is no failure. It's learning a way that it doesn't work. It's picking yourself back up and it's going back at it a different way. We talk about this a little bit at Precoa, where we'd rather have someone be able to tell us, here's 1,000 different ways this doesn't work, than one way this doesn't work that I tried 1,000 times. And so it's really, what do you do with that failure? How do you lean into that failure? And what are you going to do going forward? And so he put a lot of emphasis on picking yourself up and getting back on the horse, if you will, and go try again. And because inevitably you will fail. Like that's the reality of the world. We're all going to fail. What do we do with that failure?
That's exactly right.
The thing he would always remind me of too, when we talk about leadership, there's a TED talk that I really was impactful for me. It's an old one. It's 2012, and it's called Lollipop Moments.
And it's Lollipop Moments.
Lollipop Moments. And the author is the speaker, and he's an author, is Drew Dudley. And I'd encourage anybody to check it out. It's about a 6-minute video. But what the point of the talk is, you know, he asked the audience, and I'll probably not get this exactly correct as I repeat it, but he asked the audience, have you had any individual in your life who has made a significant impact in a moment? Hmm. And, you know, everybody raised their hand. And then he said, how many of you shared that with the person that made that impact? And like 3/4 of the hands went down. And his point was, we do not share the impact others have on our lives, because we think leadership is this grand idea that we have to materially change the world to be a leader, when in reality, it's the small moments in our daily interactions with people that really can exemplify leadership, can make incredible impact. And he shared a personal story of a woman shared with him where he had an impact that he never even knew changed the course of her life. And it was a 5-minute interaction. And so I think that, and that's kind of circling back, what he would remind me of is, did you really not make a difference today? Or are you actually just not seeing it? And it really creates a focus on the opportunity you have. I mean, I would submit that you have an opportunity to make a difference when you walk into Starbucks and order a coffee with how you interact with the individual who's taking the order. And you have an opportunity to either recognize them, make their day, or not make their day. And so,
sure.
Those are the things that he would, you know, because inevitably, as you mentioned, we have tough days and we don't feel like we made a difference. We don't feel like we did anything right. Often that's not the case. Often it's always a mixed bag. You did some things well. You probably could have done some things better. Nothing's an absolute. Nothing's an absolute success, and nothing's an absolute failure.
I love that. I love that. What great wisdom. You should record that, Tyler, and get him to talk. And put that in your in his memoirs, because that's just lovely. And that's the kind of guy your dad is. And I can see that in you as well, in everything that you've accomplished over the years. But every leader makes a big mistake that they learned from. And so maybe it's not a failure, but it's just a mistake, something they wish they could have done. So if you could go back and talk to your younger self, what kind of advice would you give your younger self? You know, this is a hard one, because you think, okay, I want to say that I you know, we all kind of had mess ups when we were younger. We did some stupid things, some things we can't talk about on the air. what advice would you give to your younger self if you could go backwards and share that?
That's a great question. I think the first thing I'd probably do is go back and tell my younger self to really appreciate my hairline, because that's going to change.
You look great, Tyler. And your dad looks great,
you.
Bald.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, you exactly. I see my future. In all seriousness, I think I had an idea when I was younger of this this idea of leadership in a very traditional, through a traditional lens, which is a leader has the answers. A leader doesn't express vulnerability. A leader is decisive, and a leader gives direction and does not need input. And I think if I went back to my younger self, I would have a conversation about that's actually the antithesis of leadership, is that leadership is really the effective leadership. It always has an underlying vulnerability and a willingness to share with others that you don't have all the answers, that you need help, that you need support, that the value of the individuals around you is they know things I don't know. They're going to contribute thoughts and ideas and perspective that I don't have. And the collective is always better than the individual. And I think that was something that I just, when I was young, you know, like when my father and I transitioned to Outlook Group, I was 30 years old. And so I felt like at 30, what I had to make up for in my age was decisiveness and confidence. And I think I would have won a lot more people over if I led more with vulnerability and sharing my own insecurity around what I didn't know at the age I was at and the responsibility I was given.
Oh, wow. Wow, that's great. That's a great answer. So that's good advice to your younger self. So everybody who's younger than us should be listening to that, because I think it's important that you do show your vulnerability. And that's a scary thing. It's scary to say, you know, gosh, I don't know the answer to this. You always want people to respect you, so you feel like you should come up with something, right?
Right.
And so I love that. That's love it. Well, was there any big mistake that people can learn from in leadership? Just an example that you would like to share with our listeners that you learned from, overcame, became better because of?
I think one thing I always go back to, and I don't know, if I would, there's plenty of along the way in my own leadership journey of, you know, kind of unbundling that idea of having all the answers, where there were decisions made across the way that would have been strengthened and much better decisions, or even different decisions, if I would have been more actively engaged in pulling perspectives and feedback from others along, you know, through the process. One thing I would point to just from, I don't know if it's necessarily framed as a mistake as much as a failure is, and this goes back to college. I attempted to walk onto my college's basketball team when I was a junior. And,
oh, did you?
And it was a Division I team, and I was grossly under talented to play Division I basketball, but I wanted to try. So, What I did through that process was I had emailed the coaching staff every day for 4 months, in the morning and in the evening, sharing with them, here's what I'm doing today to get better. And then I'd give them a rundown and debrief of what I did that day and where I felt I improved.
And wow, that's persistent.
And so when we went back to school, the first day of class, I went over to the Convocation Center, which is the basketball arena. And I walked in the office and I talked to the basketball secretary and I said my name, and I was hoping to get some time with the head coach. And this assistant coach walked through the hallway as I said my name, and he just stopped in his tracks and he's like, "No way. You're here? You got to get back here." And so he brought me in, and I ended up with an hour with the head coach, just talking through the summer, why I wanted to walk on, et cetera. I got an opportunity to play. I didn't make the team because I wasn't talented enough to play Division I basketball. But what I learned from that experience was you can get yourself into any situation you want to get yourself into. You just have to be willing to do what's uncomfortable and think a little creatively, because all I did was send an email twice a day. And all of a sudden, my name was ahead of everyone
courageous.
Else's.
That's great. That's a lot of courage there. That is persistency. That's why I know you have been really awesome in the sales arena of our profession all your life, because you are persistent and you don't give up. And I think that's an interesting and you dared to try something that you knew you probably couldn't be successful at, but you tried it anyway. That's really taking some risks.
Well, and I think if you would have asked me what was the out of failure, when we talk about what do you do with it,
right.
I learned more from that experience and just, again, having the opportunity to be walked into the coach's office, get an audience, tell my story, than I ever would have learned, you know, quite honestly, probably from just like making the team and playing Division I basketball. So was that a success or was that a failure? You know, and it's all, I think, in a little bit of what lens do you look at it through? But no, sure. I never walked on a Division I floor and played basketball.
Well, you tried out on a Division I floor though. That takes a lot of guts, Tyler. I got to tell you. And you're not. Let's see, how tall are you? About 6'2", 6'3"-ish. Are you shorter?
I'll take 6'2", 6'3", but probably. More
okay, take six. It depends on if I'm in heels or not. If I'm looking up to you, but anyway, it's not about the height. There's this couple of players. Muggsy Bogues comes to mind in the NBA, of course. Yeah, you could just go underneath everybody's legs. But you know what? It takes guts to do what you did. Did you become like a good friend of this coach? Did you ball boy, scorekeeper? Did you end up doing anything with these guys?
No,
or I was from the sidelines.
I was a little bit all in or all out on playing. And so when the playing wasn't the option, I went right back to day-to-day student life.
There you go. Good for you. Well, you know what? You just try it anyway. And that takes courage. And that's part of being a leader, is take the courage, even though you don't know if you're going to make something, you're going to try it anyway, because this is how we learn, right? Is to try new things. So I'm going to change gears real quick, because I want to talk a little bit about your theory about the future of our profession and some of your biggest concerns and solutions for our profession going forward. And, you know, and then maybe a little crystal ball thing about where do you see us in the next, 5 to 10 years? 10 years is big. Yeah. Maybe that's too long from now, but I just attended a futures forum not too long ago at Selected Independent Funeral Homes, and it was amazing. Some of the things I learned. I think you participated in that last year, and it was just great to hear from you. So I'd like to share, if you could share a little bit about your thoughts about that.
I think it's obviously a big question, and I think. I don't know that I have. I have some ideas around what the solutions could look like. But I think, but also, kind of defining the challenge. I think the challenge we face is, a declining perceived value in ceremony, ritual, and gathering. And when we look at that, we look at the rise of number of individuals in America as U.S. adults that identify as religious nuns. You know, there's 29% of U.S. adults identify as a religious nun, which means organized or institutional religion isn't a meaningful part of their day-to-day life. And I think why that's impactful is because for years, our profession has kind of leaned back to these religious institutions to inform people, here's what you do relative to ceremony and ritual when we lose a loved one or lose one of us. And as fewer and fewer people identify with those institutions, when they lose a loved one, they are under emotional distress. They're a little confused as to now what do we do? What does ceremony and ritual look like for us? And if the funeral home has failed to step into that void and really articulate the value of ceremony and ritual and what it could look like, because I know you've had this experience, but anytime I've been somewhere in our community, you know, somebody will quickly tell me, I don't want a funeral. And then they'll say, right. But what I do want is for my friends and family to get together at my favorite park. And I'd love for there to be, you know, we always got together over our favorite, you know, Ohio beer. And so I want to have a keg of that. And I wanted them to tell stories and I want some of our favorite food. And I'm like, yeah. Dude, you're explaining a funeral. Just nobody's shared with you that that's a funeral. And
yeah.
So if we failed to step into the void to articulate what ceremony and ritual can look like for those who identify as religious nuns or don't as closely identify to the religious traditions of ceremony and ritual, then I think that puts us, that's a real headwind. And I think that's the real challenge. And if you look at
it, is, and that group is growing. I'm surprised to hear it's only 29% now. I believe in some communities it's much larger than that.
Oh, I it is. If you look at age 18 to 49, it's 40%. Right. And so, right. You know, it's 33% higher the younger you get. So when you're 18 to 49, which would tell us, to your point, we're going to be working with families more and more that identify as, you know, religious nun. And what they're not saying, as you know, is they're not saying we're not spiritual. They're not saying that they don't want ceremony and ritual. And we anchor back in probably too frequently, but to weddings as an example. If you look at a wedding album from 30 years ago, the pictures most likely will have been taken in the church. And if you look at a wedding album right. today, the pictures will be in a rustic barn, a beach, wherever that setting is. But what I always like to point out is, still had a wedding. How many people do we know now are married by close friends and family as opposed to sure. a minister? They didn't, correct. People aren't saying we don't value ceremony and ritual around a wedding. They said, this is what it looks like for us today. And this is what's meaningful and relevant to us. And as a funeral profession, I think that's our challenge, is to how do we adapt to what people are asking for?
I think that's a great point. Really great point. So being more adaptable over the next 5 to 10 years, and also retrofitting your facilities, changing out your facilities to become more like the population that wants to have service or ceremony. You should be able to have whatever they need in a barn, on a beach, at a lakeside, in a park, and that should be on your price list. It should be there mm-hmm. in your packaging, as well as on-site. What do your facilities look like inside? You know, are they old? Do they need to be updated? Do you have receptions? Can you have an open bar? I know in some states you can't have food or beverages, much less right. you can have water, maybe, or sometimes like a little coffee. I encourage you to go out and change those state laws, right? Because that's right. really, we're going to start losing funerals to hotels and wedding venues as they figure out. I mean, even Disney has figured it out now. They have funeral directors on staff. So those kind of things are going to change. So I think that's very interesting. Hey, I'm going to switch gears real quick because I want to talk about something I think that is really cool. Precoa just received for 12 years in a row an award as a top workplace up in Oregon. And that's super exciting. But one thing that caught my attention is the special award for managers, because in the survey, more than 33,000 people were surveyed up in Oregon. And this award standout comes in response to the statement, my manager helps me learn and grow. My manager cares about my concerns. So Precoa won this award. And it's very interesting to me how a company the size of Precoa, how many employees are with Precoa today, Tyler?
Approximately 350 W-2 employees.
Right, 350 employees. How you can have an award like this when you hear about big corporations not being having it right and not caring for their staff. You guys are really doing it well. And Michael Hornibrook, your CEO, is talking about the biggest difference is being in the people and having a manager that truly cares about your concerns and helps them grow. I think it starts with the values that actually Precoa was founded on, of kindness, progression, and craftsmanship, and encouraging new ideas and having idea sessions. And I don't care if you're a funeral home with 2 or 3 people or a cemetery with 5 people or 10 people. It doesn't matter the size you are. It matters mm-hmm. that you care truly for your people and how to get your people to feel and get excited about making a difference in their world. I'd just like to end with your thoughts about Precoa's values as well as how they align with your values. Because one of the things I do in my coaching is work to help people discover their core values. A lot of people don't know what they are. They don't know how to find them or discover them. And then make sure that your company's values align with yours. Or if you're an owner of a company and you don't have your values established and you're not teaching it to your employees, there's a disconnect many times, especially with the up and coming generations who are very value driven, to bring those sets of values to the table and ensure that their values align with yours. And I think it's one of the keys to employee retention and recruitment. Tell us a little bit about that as we conclude, because I think, and congratulations to Precoa. I know, Tyler, you're a big part of this because I know who you are and what your heart is like. I think it's important to use more of your heart in business today. And I'd love to hear more about what Precoa really, how'd they get there with 350 employees to get this kind of award?
Well, I think our values of kindness, progression, and craftsmanship are definitely foundational to that. I also think as we've continued to try to define what business means to us, and that doesn't mean it's right, it's wrong. It's what it means to us, and what the purpose of business is to us is to enrich people's lives. Oftentimes you hear the purpose of business is to create a return for shareholders. And there's nothing wrong with that, but we really would debate that from our perspective and say the purpose of business is to enrich people's lives. And I think that's where we, again, is also foundational to the culture that we've been fortunate enough to create, to feed, and to hope to continue to grow. I'll read this to you. It's our definition of core employee, because I also feel like, and we feel strongly that defining that clearly helps you to sustain a culture, because it's not going to be a fit for everybody. You know, a culture of an organization doesn't fit for everyone. And as you mentioned, having alignment to those values is really critical for somebody to see a clear line of sight to a long career trajectory here. And so our core employee definition is, core employees strive to live Precoa's values. They are emotionally intelligent individuals who enjoy working and creatively solving problems that come with growth companies. They use common sense, navigate ambiguity, and drive towards results. They see people as people and enjoy authentic connection and teamwork. They approach challenges with positivity, humility, and energy. And that's
wonderful.
That's what we interview on. That's what we source on. And when we say things like our values are kindness, progression, and craftsmanship, when you hear kindness, that can feel a little bit ambiguous. It could feel a little bit, you know, quite honestly, some people would say that feels a little fluffy. But we are very intentional about that, because progression means we're always moving forward. Complacency is devastating. Craftsmanship means the details matter, that we're going to be maniacal in the detail, and that what we've launched to the market, what we provide our partners, it works. And when you think about kindness, we're going to, that vulnerability that we spoke of earlier is really kind of like the underlying foundation to any meaningful connection. And we're going to lead with kindness, because there's this thing that's often overlooked, that we don't actually know what anybody is going through on any given day. And we often assign meaning to their action, to what they say or what they're doing, when in reality, we have no idea what they're going through. And we feel like the recognition of the whole person is really important. And leading with kindness means we're empathetic to the individual, because we don't know what we don't know. And
exactly.
I think that's, but that's our workplace, and that's not necessarily the work for everyone. And so it's really important that as an organization, to not only sustain, strengthen, and grow your culture, that you interview on those values and you give examples of what this culture looks like in practice. So the individual can decide, you know, assuming they have the prerequisite talent, experience, et cetera, to do the job, they can decide that, is this a cultural fit for me? Because it will be apparent pretty quickly in a culture that's defined as ours as to whether it is or isn't. And I think that's a really important part of that.
I think that's awesome. And you have to walk the talk every day, because if you come in and you can say things that this is the kind of culture we have, but if you didn't actually prove it, you wouldn't have the kind of wonderful staff that you do have. I mean, everywhere from the top levels, I mean, from Michael and his dad and your partners, as well as all the way down to the front lines of the teams that are out there every day in the market. caring for funeral homes and helping them with their pre-planning programs. I mean, they're all such nice, kind people. And yeah. And I have to say, that's been drilled down. So you're walking the talk. Kudos to you. I think funeral service struggles a little bit in this because we have had our focus for so long on our customer and we've forgotten about focusing on our employees. And I would like to challenge everyone out there that's listening today. I think your staff and your that support you, that you support, is your number one asset in your company. No matter what, supporting them, growing them as leaders, helping empower them, helping them discover who they are and where their talents are, and teaching them and developing them in many, many ways is so critical. And if you do that, your customers will come. And I think we've got our organizational chart, and I've been a proponent for this for many, many years. I think our org charts are upside down. I think the customer is not on the top. I think the employee is on the top. And if they are not your primary focus and care today, then we've got it backwards or upside down. Either way you want to design your org chart. And it doesn't matter how large your company is. I think it matters that you care for people and you're kind. And I'm hearing stories out there of employers who are not kind. I'm hearing stories of funeral directors that when a new young person comes into their workplace are not kind to them in helping them when they're serving their apprenticeship or just starting off as a new funeral director, as a new pre-planner. And I'm very sad to hear that. And it's my hope and my goal that we can spread that kindness. And good for you at Precoa for doing that, Tyler. We thank you for being with us today.
Oh, well, thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to be with you.
Thanks again. Well, at Your Funeral Coach, if you're seeking specialized insights to conquer the many challenges that you have in death care, let's connect. I'm really committed at Your Funeral Coach to challenge you to change, to empower you to grow, and to inspire you to greatness. And speaking of greatness, we just had one of our great people here with us today, Tyler Anderson, who's Vice President of Business Development for Precoa. Thanks for being with us, everyone.